Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Encourage you to go subscribe to the podcast, Thursday edition here. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton. Miranda Devine was awesome in the first hour of the program. You can also check out all of our interviews at clayandbuck.com if you're worried about whether they might get pulled off YouTube, which is a valid concern considering our Rand Paul interview got pulled last week. We bring in now, I'm hoping that I can go third time's the charm and nail the pronunciation of her name, and I'm actually curious what percentage of people do nail the pronunciation of her name. Jedediah Bela joins us now. I absolutely love your Twitter feed, Jedediah. Did I get that right? What percentage of people correctly pronounce your name?
So you got it right. And what's really interesting are the people who get the Jedediah right, and then I get Bela. It's like, oh, wow, you were so close. You got Jedediah, and then you just, things just went bad. So you got it right. I thought you got it right last time, but
I think I did, and then I bailed. But I love your Twitter feed. I encourage people to go follow you. And Buck and I were actually talking about a conversation when we were getting you booked, and he was pointing out, hey, initially, you've got a young child. You're a mom, like so many of the people that are listening out there. And initially when COVID happened, your response was, okay, I'm going to mask up. I'm going to follow all of the rules. When was the time for you where you started looking at the data yourself and saying, wait a minute, this is not adding up? Do you remember a particular time or place when you started to question what you were being told by Fauci and the CDC and other quote unquote experts?
You know, you're right, and Buck is right as well, that I did follow everything in the beginning. I had the 4.5-month-old baby, and we had no data. Not only did we have no data at that time, but as far as we knew, there were no treatments. Of course, now we have a lot of information on treatment suppression that was going on and all sorts of shenanigans. But at the time, it was like, stay home, and if you get really, really sick, go to the hospital, which sounded terrible to me. So I was worried. It took me a few months, honestly. It really started when I saw that schools were very able to safely open and were being closed well beyond the point where it made any sense. Having been in classrooms through flu seasons and having seen just what's possible, I was like, okay, this is a huge red flag. What is going on here? That was about, I would say, a few months in. It really started for me when we started getting data on natural immunity, when we started getting data on risk to children, when you started realizing that something was going on here that had nothing to do with science and had nothing to do with health. And there was clearly a path forward toward controlling people, that they didn't care about anything. They didn't care about data. They didn't care about science, but they were trying to configure how can we scare people long enough that we can control their health decisions, that we can really make big impacts on what they do with their own lives and with their own families. So it did take me several months, but it started with kids because I had, you know, I had been in those classrooms and I was like, wait a minute, what exactly is going on here? Once you started seeing, you know, collusion between the CDC and the teachers unions, I mean, that really blew it up for me. It was well before the mandates came along.
And Jedediah, you were a teacher, not to interrupt Jedediah, but you were a teacher for years, just so everyone knows. You know that world well.
That's correct. I was in traditional classrooms for 6 years, grade 7 through college, actually, now that I think back, through college seniors, and also in non-traditional settings, you know, with kids as young as 2. So I really, you know, these issues of masking, I've been talking about this, and the reason my Twitter is so fired up is because I've had it. You know, we are doing enormous damage to children. I mean, not just in, you know, everyone's focusing on the masks on the kids' faces, which is horrific and looks like child abuse in many cases, but just having them being around adults that are masked all the time. You're now seeing speech delays in kids, developmental issues, social disorders, anxiety disorders. Of course, that's the only world some of these kids know, walking around with zombified, paranoid adults that are masked all the time. So I'm not doing that. Listen, I'm getting my kid. I'm not putting my kid in places where he's going to be surrounded by that. He is perfectly healthy. He was exposed to COVID. He didn't get so much as a sniffle. He was a healthy little boy. That was my paranoia at the time that I was imposing on him, which luckily I got out of pretty quickly. But, you know, adults need to wake up and realize that some of the damage they're doing to kids is going to be long-lasting way beyond COVID. Way, way, way beyond COVID.
We're speaking to Jedediah Bela. She's an author, commentator, and you can check out her Locals account to subscribe to her commentary. Jedediah, it seems to me that we keep now getting, we have a phenomenon happening in this country where the mandate does not work as we have been told it would, and the answer is more mandates. And I've been worried that this is where we were heading all along. You certainly see this with masking, where now they will only admit that masking is ineffective in order to get us to put N95 masks on people, including children now, despite the fact that Germany, going over a year back, started an N95 mandate. Only medical grade masks, only N95s allowed in Germany. It did absolutely nothing to reduce cases or prevent the spread of the virus. How do we break this cycle? I mean, you're talking, I'm sure you have a lot of parents, because this has been central to, you know, you and Carol Markowitz are two of the people I know best on the right who have kids who are in school who are saying, this is completely insane. And I appreciate the use of the term child abuse. I think there is a mass systemic child abuse that's going on as a result of this. How do we break the cycle, though, of the only answer to failed mandates is more mandates?
That is not going to break in certain places. And truthfully, I don't know how it's going to break, because you realize the admissions that they would have to make at this point. I mean, you saw the CDC come out with that study verifying that, in fact, natural immunity was better than you know, vaccinated immunity for the Delta wave. That took some time. I wonder, you know, what happened there. Maybe enough people, you know, please Big Pharma, they made enough money, so, you know, they were able to come out and tell the truth. We all know natural immunity for a long time couldn't be monetized, and that's why they weren't talking about it. It's not new. Natural immunity is not a new concept. Talk to any physician and they'll tell you it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. We know what this is. So I don't know, because you would have to walk back massive destruction to businesses, massive destruction to cities, massive destruction to children, and then people would be looking and pointing blame where it's due. You know, so I don't know how those politicians, those bureaucrats are going to come in now and say, oh, by the way, we were wrong, without people then voting them out of office and wanting them to pay consequences for what they've said and done. What I think is going to happen here, you're going to see, I mean, we're already seeing a massive split in the country. There's places you go and it just looks normal. I was in Florida and I was in Texas for a brief period of time in the last, you know, month and a half. You walk around there and it looks normal. You go to New York City and people look zombified. They're terrified. They're masked. They're afraid. They, you know, people won't walk into the nail salon without, oh my God, is everyone vaccinated? Which makes no sense, because we know the vaccinated also get and spread the disease. So I think you're going to have a bigger split. I think some of these cities that have instituted these dystopian nightmares are going to have to sink. And by sink, I don't mean where they are now. I mean really, really sink, where people have completely fled, where their budgets are a disaster, where people, you know, decide, I'm not showing up to work anymore in these places. I'm going to get up and get out. And I don't know, though, like a Biden administration, you know, look what's happened with all of the mandates that he's tried to institute. They're not going anywhere. They haven't gone anywhere. They're declared unconstitutional. Companies are walking them back. So honestly, I think there's just going to be, you know, in 2022, you're going to see a massive, you know, red wave. I think you're going to see Joe Biden having a huge problem if he does, in fact, decide to run for reelection. And I think it's going to come down to votes, and people are just going to say enough. And I'll tell you what, you know, guys, oftentimes people will take a lot of garbage when it comes to themselves, but not when it comes to their children, not when it comes to their grandkids, not when it comes to their nieces and nephews. So I think they went too far. Places like New York City instituting a mandate on a five-year-old can't walk into a restaurant, can't go to a birthday party if it's in a public indoor space. That was the moment that I think a lot of people, and I think Carol Markowitz is in that group, that they said, I'm getting up and I'm getting out. I'm done. I don't see how they walk back policies that have damaged people's children and their businesses, their livelihoods in such a way. I don't think they ever get a pass for that.
Jedediah, I'm curious. You went on The View, and we had you on right after you went on The View, mm-hmm. and they cut you off. And they were like, oh, what you're saying is scary and unsafe, and this is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Has anyone at The View reached out to you now that the CDC essentially agrees with everything that you said on The View? And do you see in your life an awakening of other people to the data and what is actually transpiring? Or is it causing those people in your experience to double down even more so on their inaccuracies rather than have to acknowledge that they were wrong?
So I've heard nothing from the folks at The View. And what I was saying at the time, remember, was stuff that the CDC, some of it at least, had already been acknowledged, that vaccinated people get and spread the disease. That's why they had brought the masks in for vaccinated people again. I attested to natural immunity. I was basically left, you know, days later I had heard that they had made a joke, oh, her sky-high immunity. Yeah, well, guess what? It's still sky high. It still hasn't budged. I didn't get sick again. I was right. And now the CDC, which, you know, the left loves, you know, regardless as to what they say, well, they came up and even they had to back it up because at some point they just look ridiculous. I will say this. Yes, I know a lot of people who got the vaccines. They followed everything. They wore the masks, everything. And now they're like, you know what? I'm not getting the booster and no one's going to tell me to get the booster. I'm tired of being told what to do. I have members of my family that have, you know, taken that stand. I know a lot of people who are liberal. Most of the people I know in New York City are liberal and they're tired. My concern, of course, and I have this conversation with many of them. I say, listen, you're tired in New York City. That's great. Listen, I'm willing to welcome anyone into the Freedom Club who wants to be, you know, a delayed entry is still welcome. However, don't you dare go to Florida or Texas because I'm going to have one foot in both and vote for this nonsense that is decaying New York City because then you're going to have a problem with me because I am tired of all this stuff and I'm tired of even liberals. They're suddenly awakened and it's like, wait a minute, this has gone too far. I don't want to be told what to do at this level. And then they go and vote for stuff and you wind up with the same politicians in power in new places that are doing the same garbage that they were doing in these blue states that are sinking. So I do see an awakening. I have to say, I really do. I think people have started to pay attention to the data. And I think also there's a lot of people who got vaccinated, got boosted, and then got COVID. And they're like, wait a minute, I have a sister-in-law who lost her job in a hospital because they were saying that she was unvaccinated and at a risk. And here I am, you know, triple vaccinated, and I got my husband sick, and I spread it around. So what's really going on here? And that is happening, I think, in a larger scale than people realize. And you're going to see it. You're going to see it. It's going to come through in people's votes. I'm telling you, it's going to come through because people feel played. Nobody, liberal, conservative, I don't care who you are, you don't like to feel played like that. You don't like to feel like somebody, you don't want to be puppeteered by anyone. So I have people all across the ideological spectrum that I've heard from, many of them parents, but some single that are like, wait a minute, I lost my job. I couldn't, you know, now I'm being told I got vaccinated. I have to get boosted and I had COVID after the vaccine. What is even going on? And they've, you know, taken off their Fauci hats and they've put them aside and said, yeah, maybe I'm not so proud to be supporting this clown. And I don't use that word lightly, but I mean it.
Jedediah, I've got three kids. I've said publicly on the show, I'm not getting them the COVID vaccine. I'm not anti-vax. My kids got the measles, mumps, rubella, all that stuff. You've got a young kid. If someone tried to make you give him the COVID shot, your response as a mom would be what?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because I'm looking at the data. I'm looking at the data. It doesn't make sense. First of all, Hartley was exposed to COVID, as I said. In fact, he was exposed a number of times because you know how this works. You get a call from someone who suddenly has COVID and you were around them the week earlier. He's never had an issue. He was in a one bedroom apartment. My 4.5-month-old with me and my husband. We both had it. I was symptomatic for a little over a week at least. My husband was symptomatic for a few days. He was laughing. At the time, I was wearing masks in the apartment, like an idiot, by the way, because, you know, that's what some of the experts, in quotes, were telling me. Wear a mask, but not when you're in the other room to sleep. Just when you're, the absurdity of the things that we listen to just in a state of fear is unbelievable. That's why I understand that head, because I had that head. And that now that I have a little distance, I'm embarrassed by some of the things that I did, even staying home from work so long. Just so stupid. But you know, you got to come back to reality when you come to it. But the bottom line is people are awake in ways that they've never been. And not only that, there's a lot of questions about Big Pharma now. There's a lot of questions about, you know, what is this one size fits all? Why are you treating my 2-year-old, you know, who is not at risk for anything when it comes to COVID? He was exposed already the same as someone who hasn't been exposed and is 80 years old with 4 comorbidities. Why are they in the same group of people when it comes to an idiotic mandate out of a city that's being run into the ground like New York City?
Jedediah, I don't want to get in the way of the fired up mama bear right now, but we got to leave it there this time. We'll have you back again soon to talk about this. Great stuff, though. Check out her Locals account. Jedediah, where do people go for that?
Yeah, Bila.locals.com for uncensored content if you're worried about Big Brother Twitter snooping over your shoulder all the time.
Thanks so much. Thank you. You could be in line for some serious savings, folks, because there are still nearly 1.5 million homeowners out there who could save $400 a month by refinancing. You could be one of them. Now is the time to call American Financing for that free mortgage review we've been telling you about. That's right. There really is no better time to call since the Fed has signaled rates will likely rise in March. You really can't afford to miss out on these monthly savings. And you could be looking at a lot more if you choose American Financing, because they're known for saving customers up to $1,000 a month. For you, that could mean an extra $12,000 a year you have at the end of the year in your bank account. Think about what that kind of money can do. And I just closed a loan this week with American Financing myself. They are incredible when it comes to customer service. Great rates, so helpful. They are in this to get you the best possible loan. They make it seamless, Clay. How do our people get hooked up?
It's easy. Call American Financing at 800-777-8109. Get your phones in your hand. Rates are about to go up. You could save up to $1,000 a month. That's $12,000 a year. All you need to do is call 800-777-8109. You can also visit AmericanFinancing.net, NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
Welcome back to the Clay and Buck Show. Our friend Jedediah Bila there, fired up. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you have seen her in the past, fighting with libs on The View. She's also done a lot of Fox before, but great stuff there. And just showing also the evolution of somebody from the beginning to where we are now, willing to listen to experts, which a lot of us were. And Clay and I were talking about this. In the early days, you know, they were setting up field tents in Central Park for all the overflow, you know, bodies that were, it was just a mayhem here for the few weeks in March of the shutdowns and the lockdowns. But then we saw more and more. And really the turning point, I think, Clay, for a lot of people was the reality of blue check doctors who had been saying, sorry, your business is gone. Sorry, your life has been taken away from you for months now. But these BLM protests and riots are real important. Like this, this is where the virus doesn't get to determine things. When it comes to BLM, I'm sorry, if a lot of people have to die from a virus, that's just the way that it has to be because we're fighting racism. By the way, that was their argument, folks. I am not misread. The argument was this is worth it, even with the risks to public health. It was crazy, but also very instructive.
Yeah, I came on. I remember doing my sports show and I said, can we just call sporting events protests? Like you're protesting the visiting team? Because evidently when you protest, then you're allowed to have massive crowds, as if COVID made a decision on whether or not to infect people based on why they were in close proximity to other people.
You know, our buddy Raheem Kassam going to be joining us here to talk about, Clay, he thinks that there's an element of the U.S. national security apparatus, the Biden regime, that actually wants war in Ukraine at some level, or would get involved if
the
war starts.
The wag the dog theory, basically,
Talk to him about it in just a couple minutes.
No doubt. On 9/11, all of us experienced real tragedy. No matter where you were that day, you felt the impact. 2,977 people were killed in terrorist attacks on American soil. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation's been supporting America's heroes and their families ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For severely injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. And now, thanks to Operation Homebase, Tunnel to Towers is gifting tiny homes to homeless veterans. Our nation's heroes, people who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities, need your help. That's why you need to help these heroes and their families. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good in their honor. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We were just talking about, I feel like this show has been on like warp speed today. Like 1 minute, we tipped it off. I hope that feels the way for the listeners too. Next minute, we're almost done with the show. Encourage you to download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a minute. We're joined now by Raheem Kassam, does fantastic work. You can find him on Twitter at Raheem Kassam. You can also read him at fundrealnews.com. And he's got a great piece up. It's in Newsweek, I believe, right now. Headline is, Why Do American Elites Want War in Ukraine? The argument basically here is, and I think it's really kind of a fascinating angle that you're hitting here, Raheem, is basically as bad as things are in the United States on so many different fronts, and maybe we're seeing this a little bit with the Supreme Court distraction, that the Biden administration needs a wag-the-dog style theory to distract people from all the things that are going wrong domestically here in the country.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for having me to talk about this. I've been trying to raise the alarm on this for some months now as I've started to see the foreign policy establishment and the foreign policy talking shops, the magazines, the groups that get together here in Washington, D.C., start chuntering on about what are we going to do about Ukraine's border sovereignty. And my response to this has often been, what are you doing about America's border sovereignty? Because there are, you know, there are crises upon crises going on the southern border, crises going on in people's communities, in their supermarkets, in their ordinary lives right now. And Joe Biden, of course, I mean, it only takes a cursory glance at the polling data, the approval data, and just talking to ordinary people every day to realize that the establishment now has in its mind the idea that it can change the narrative, the entire course of the Biden regime by taking the United States and its allies into a war over Ukraine's border sovereignty. What it also thinks is that, hey, we have problems at the moment. We have economic problems. We have a lot of things to sell to the American people in terms of the inflationary data and where spending is going and build back better and all of this. And what better way to stimulate an economy and to stimulate a people by taking them into war? But the problem with those premises is that the American people, much like the rest of the Western world, are so tired of these wars, and a war in Ukraine against Russia, backed by China, by the way, would be another decades-long incursion. People don't want it, and now, you know, you saw the whole, oh, we're going to be at war by Christmas. We weren't at war by Christmas, and now they're having to backtrack. Well, maybe by February, maybe by the end of February. You know, it's because it's risible on the face of it, and I want everybody out there, as much as you might care about the, you know, the democratic integrity or the border integrity of somewhere like Ukraine, if you care at all, this is not the way to go about securing it.
Raheem, it's Buck, my man. I want to know what you think Putin, if we could just have you sit on the other side of the chessboard for a second, so to speak. What if he goes in? Do you think he's trying? First of all, do you think he's going to go in with something serious on a military scale? And what is he trying to get out of this?
So I told a friend of mine that works in the national security apparatus on Capitol Hill about a month ago. I said the thing that you guys are getting incorrect is that Putin doesn't want a prolonged 20-year war with NATO or even against Ukrainian troops, quite frankly. He's not stupid enough to do something like that. He knows that, and you get the counter arguments, right, that say, yeah, but Putin needs the approval rating boost as well. Sure, you might get a temporary one from thumping your chest, but when this turns out to be a 10, 15, 20-year excursion, suddenly those things don't matter, and the legacy is destroyed as well. And if Putin cares about anything, it's legacy. So here's what he wants. He wants NATO to take its troops out of Ukraine and to return Ukraine to being the buffer state that it once was. Does he want to exercise influence over there? Of course, that's Russia's region, right? There's that meme you see that, you know, shows all the NATO bases and says, how dare Russia establish their country so close to our bases, right? And so you can understand that when you're surrounded like that, when you see the European Union and the State Department and all these and NATO sort of pushing further and further into Ukraine, up to Russia's border, you can sort of understand that, hey, they might not like that. That might be something that they don't want. So that's his end goal. Push them out, change the old perspective of Eastern Europe, and allow Russia some breathing room. I don't particularly believe that he wants to enlarge or expand the Russian Federation territorially, because I think he understands that it would be an ungovernable situation were he to try to take the parts of Ukraine that are very Ukrainian, the parts of Ukraine that don't feel Russian, that don't speak Russian, and that are predominantly more liberal and modern. And they want to be part of, they want to be more part of Europe. So I don't think he wants that. The part of this where I think you can actually have some sense brought to the table here is for us to say, well, what's the end goal of all of this? Look at Afghanistan. What was the end of everything in Afghanistan? Well, the Taliban's in power again, and now we have to talk to them on a diplomatic level. So after a 20-year war with Russia over Ukraine, what are you going to expect to happen here? You're going to have a status quo ante, and you're probably going to have to deal with Russia back to, you know, diplomacy as we have known it for the last 10, 20 years. Let's skip the war. Let's skip to the good part. And the good part is trying to bring Russia into the sphere of influence of the West to repel Chinese incursions into the Western world. That's, you know, that is the ideal thing. It will take 20 years itself to do, much like a war, but there will be less spending, less bloodshed, and a whole lot more goodwill afterwards. I know it's weird. I know it's a weird idea because we tend to, you know, just think about settling our disputes with troops and guns and bombs. But you can actually get this done with serious long-term diplomacy.
Raheem, what's the time frame here? There's a lot of talk about the fact that there's all these troops on the border with Ukraine. And certainly we've had talking back and forth in terms of media questioning surrounding Ukraine for what feels like a month or more now. When is this going to be resolved one way or the other in your mind?
Well, as I understand it now, there's a lot of nothing getting done, right? One side will say, well, the Russians will say, we want everything out of Ukraine. And then NATO comes back and says, what are you talking about? That's obviously a non-starter. You know, we're not going to remove anything from Ukraine. Well, you know, at that point, it's just going to be a posturing exercise for the next probably 3 to 6 months. After that, I suspect within the next 3 to 6 months or just after that, I suspect that Putin will look back at that quote minor incursions comment from Joe Biden last week, where he seemed to give away a little bit of the foreign policy apparatus's game here in Washington, D.C. The game being that they're not necessarily expecting a full-blown Russian invasion into Ukraine. What they're encouraging, and I really do mean encouraging, goading almost, is a small incursion into Ukraine by Vladimir Putin and Russia in order then to provoke a full NATO response. That is the ideal situation from the warmongers in this. And I suspect that come 3 to 6 months' time, Putin will look back at that, realize this has gone nowhere, and go, well, all right, if, you know, if that's what they want, let's give them what they want. Let's see how it plays out. I think, unfortunately, that's a bad case scenario as far as I'm concerned, but that's the trajectory I think we're on right now.
Raheem Kassam, everybody. Go to fundrealnews.com to support the work that he's doing over at the National Pulse. And he is Raheem Kassam on Twitter. The Twitter game is strong with this one. Raheem, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Not as strong as yours. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Look, you've heard the statistics on the inflation we're contending with. 7% over the last year. Never mind that our president politely dismisses this as a real issue. The highest inflation in 40 years' time has caused your savings account to be worth 7% less than a year ago if all your savings is in cash. Many people have diversified some of their savings to deal with this with the purchase of gold. I mean real gold. And you can get it, and you should get it, from the Oxford Gold Group. They make it possible for me and many others like me to purchase gold easily. They'll also arrange for the delivery of that real gold to my home address. I've already got it stored away safely and securely, and know that I'm actually diversifying and holding a store of value. If you think buying real gold is just for the few, it's not. You can buy gold at any quantity and make multiple purchases over the course of a year. You build up over time. My friends at the Oxford Gold Group are who you need to call. They'll explain all of it to you. You can have real gold delivered to your home or have real gold as part of your IRA. It is just a phone call away with the Oxford Gold Group. Think about that. 7% inflation a year, folks. Time to act is now. Call them at 833-404-GOLD and learn how you can have real gold in your IRA and delivered to your door. That's the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D.
Man, we are already at the final segment of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show for the day.
Yeah, parting is such sweet sorrow, but we will be back with you, of course, tomorrow. If you missed any part of us today, if you're listening on one of our 400-plus fantastic and very much appreciated affiliates across the country, you might have missed a little bit of us. You can always listen on the podcast. You can go back on demand. We put it up hour by hour and a best of every day. Clay and Buck show. Type that in the iHeart app, our favorite place to listen to it. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, etc. And we will be tomorrow having a discussion, I think, continuing the discussion about not only the COVID madness that we're still being put through, but the straight up calls for censorship from the government now. I mean, to just shut stuff down. And Clay's got that story. We'll get into it. But he just sent me this one. And this is, you know, it's fun because I get to learn about some of this stuff from Clay. Because as you all know, I'm not one thing that I'm just not up on is the sports media. I do not know much about the sports media. Busy learning about other things. But here we had a Deadspin, which I have heard of before. This guy writes this headline. Clay sent this to me. Sure, Mike McDaniel seems cool, but he's not worthy of a head coaching gig yet. Please stop and think before you inadvertently dub another young white guy as the next hot NFL coaching prospect. And then they had to add an editor's note. We learned after the publication of his article that 49ers offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel, whom we describe as a white guy, is in fact biracial. We regret the error. Clay. Wow.
It's just emblematic. I know you're stunned by this, but whatever you think of the larger political media bias, at least there is some form of balance, right? Now, we know that balance is not equal. The media is overwhelmingly left-wing as it pertains to covering political-related issues. There's virtually no one who pushes back against far left wing agenda journalism connected to sports. And this article, for those of you out there, they literally wrote an article saying that this guy who has a job doesn't deserve to be considered as a head coach because he's just another white guy. And then they had to issue a correction because they found out that the guy that they were attacking as being just another white guy, his dad's actually black. So he's of mixed race descent. So this idea, and I think it's emblematic and honestly connected to what we saw from Joe Biden in his announcement today, what you are seeing, did you see, I'm sure you did, Buck, where Kamala Harris came out and talked about all the people that needed to be protected in America, and the only group that wasn't included in needing to be protected was white guys? And I don't know what the total percentage of white guys is in America right now. Maybe 30%, roughly. Is that, you know, 31, 32, something along those lines? We're a substantial minority. One in three people maybe in America would be a white guy, which means two-thirds of people are not white guys. Yet the war on white guys in media is really kind of crazy, even in the world of sports, which objectively you could look at data, Buck, and be like, oh, this guy's doing a pretty good job, or this guy's doing a bad job, based on having the meritocracy of wins and losses and yards gained and touchdowns and everything else to use as your metric. Yet skin color is overwhelmingly the way that they want to analyze this from a sports perspective.
Sports, kind of like gambling or being a portfolio analyst at a hedge fund, there are numbers, there are wins and losses, there's how are you doing, right? So it should be pretty clear who's good and who's not. And so that's why you would think that maybe it'd be a little bit harder to push some of the anti-meritocracy nonsense out there. Matt in Raleigh, North Carolina wants to weigh in. Matt, what do you got for us?
Hey, Clay and Buck, I was wondering if you could help shed some light on the situation in Ukraine and kind of the history of it. It's my understanding that we're kind of in this predicament, and correct me if I'm wrong, and please tell me the history of, didn't Clinton basically have Ukraine get rid of their army and say, we'll always be there and have your back and don't worry about Russia, and if something happens, the U.S. will step in and take care of you?
So I mentioned this in passing earlier in the week when I talked about Ukraine. Clay and I did a little deep dive on Ukraine. When I said, first of all, it means borderlands, which is interesting because now border sovereignty is the whole issue. That's what the name Ukraine means. But also, it was the third most nuclear armed state in the world after the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Soviet Union with it. What happened was a number of nuclear armed powers, the U.S., the U.K. and Russia, signed something in 1994 called the Budapest Memorandum. It's a memorandum. It's a memorandum of understanding that says that when Ukraine gives up its nukes, it will be protected as a state by Russia, UK, and the US. It's not formally a treaty, so it's not legally binding in the sense that a Senate ratified treaty would be, as I understand it. And, you know, I'm going off of memory here. But the Budapest Memorandum of 1994 is what people usually point to as the U.S. promise to protect, along with Russia and the U.K., though. So that complicates it, the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Clay, moral of the story, if you got nukes, don't give up your nukes.
And if you don't have nukes, try to get nukes.
Yep.
Because once you have them, I mean, that's really the story of North Korea. It's the story of Iran. That's why they're pursuing it, so that they can have some form of territorial sovereignty. That's the argument. Certainly, I understand why we don't want North Korea and Iran to have nuclear weapons. But from their perspective, you can understand the argument that they would be making in favor of it.
Miriam in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'll be down in West Palm next month. What's up, Miriam?
I'm just calling because I have been watching the Freedom Convoy 2022 going on right now on the capital of Canada, Ottawa. Hundreds and thousands of truck drivers are protesting against their dictator, Prime Minister Trudeau, because of their COVID vaccines against them. And I am so excited to see how the Canadian people are fighting back. And I see the people on the overpasses supporting them as they go through. And so I am just so happy that people are pushing back, because enough is enough. And I hope the same thing happens to our country, because if those truck drivers stand strong, they can bring to his knees to Trudeau, because there will be no fuel, there will be no groceries in the grocery stores. And that is a great thing.
Miriam, great Miriam, call. Yeah.
Fantastic call. I'm glad you gave us an opportunity to mention that. I know there are a ton of Canadian truck drivers that listen to this show. And if you aren't familiar with what's going on in Canada, first of all, they're basically in a police state in much of Canada over COVID. And these truck drivers are staging a protest by driving across Canada based on the government overreach as it pertains to vaccines and COVID regulations in general. And many people in Canada are showing up to cheer that caravan of drivers, truck drivers, as they go past. So if you are listening to us right now, go ahead and honk the horn in honor of your protest, and we vastly support you out there, and thank you for standing up for what is right.
When you're a radio guy like Clay is, like I am, you know that your radio listener truckers, they're rolling with you holidays, day in, day out, 3 hours at a time a lot of the time, always rolling along with us. We appreciate all you out there. Clay and I have so much more to talk to you about tomorrow. Stick around with us, man. It's going to be amazing.